Good morning, right here from Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, Tennessee. You are tuning into 102.5 The Game. Michelle and Junie Riddle here, waiting on Michelle Knezvik, who got stuck in a little bit of traffic this morning. She will be joining us any minute now. But a lot of things going on, especially here locally, that we have to talk about. We're broadcasting live from Barrel House inside of Bridgestone Arena, where out on the plaza here at Bridgestone, they are set to unveil the Pekka Rinne statue in all those events. Sean Henry's going to be speaking. I'm sure a bunch of people will be speaking. Pekka will be here in person, and anybody is free to come out here on the plaza to be able to witness, you know, go on Broadway, go on some of those rooftops to get a good view of what's going on, because this is a very special day here in Smashville. The Preds are set to face off against the Seattle Kraken, game two of their little mini series here in Nashville, where the Preds won in a shootout this past Thursday. Switching over a little bit to the NCAA tournament as well, both one seeds that were remaining in the Sweet 16 last night fell. San Diego State knocked off Alabama, the number one overall seed, 71-64, in a really back-to-forth thriller. And then Miami knocking off Houston, who was the number one overall team in the AP poll for much of this season, beating them pretty handily, 89-75, to advance. Princeton also taking a loss to Creighton last night, and Texas handling business against Xavier. So we have our Elite Eight in the NCAA tournament. We're going to be getting into some Tennessee Titans today, as well as Mike Clay from ESPN came out with an article that kind of puts the Titans in the bottom five roster grades overall, based off of all the free agency moves that teams have made. So we got a jam-packed show that we're going to talk about this morning. But the first thing I really want to get into is this NCAA tournament. I mean, wow. Flat out wow. We are now seeing an Elite Eight to where not one single one seed made it in. Not one. And, I mean, we're talking about some pretty good one seeds here. Like Alabama. Alabama was the winner in my bracket. I thought all year long this Alabama team was the best team in the country. And I know a lot of people were rooting against Alabama because of everything that they had going on. I completely understand that. It makes perfect sense to me why you wouldn't want Alabama to win. But Alabama took a huge loss to San Diego State. They fell down early. They were down by about 5 points at the half. Bama comes out raging in the second, takes about an 8-10 point lead, and it looked like that they were starting to hit a groove. But San Diego State, man, flipped the switch in that second half after being down, and they just went on a tear. Alabama couldn't hit a perimeter shot to save their life towards the tail end of that game, and the number one overall seed falls. And as Michelle Knezvik tweeted out earlier, late last night, that after Bama lost, that the last number one overall seed that won the NCAA tournament, it's been 10 years, 2013, the Louisville Cardinals, my hometown team, was the last number one overall seed to win. But Houston losing to Miami. I didn't get to watch this game. I primarily watched the Alabama-San Diego State and also the Creighton-Princeton game. I was going to flip over to Texas Xavier, but that, I mean, Texas just mollywopped Xavier. You know, you talk about a team that's getting really hot. But this Houston game against Miami, Miami controlled this game the entire way through. I mean, it seemed like they just came out and had Houston's number. Michelle and I talked about it as well, as she's rolling into Barrel House here with our iced coffee. Not one single spill yet this morning, which is absolutely excellent. But meanwhile, getting back into this NCAA tournament game, Miami beating Houston, just absolutely running through them. And we talked about Miami. Miami, an ACC team, ACC not a very good basketball conference this year, but flat out, Miami has some really good guard play.
Yeah, they got the ACC Player of the Year. Hey, y'all.
Hello.
Listen.
How we doing?
Real quick, not to hijack this, but should have listened to Sean Henry on Friday.
Why is that?
He said that Fifth Ave was going to be closed.
Oh.
And I'm like, do I turn here? Do I turn on Fourth? I'm like, no, I'll turn this way, come around that other way. Oh, no. And then.
You sound out of breath.
Oh, I'm a little out of breath. And then I go, then I park.
She's got her running shoes on. She was ready to go.
I got my running shoes on. Shout out the Preds head of security, Bill. I'm fiddling through my bag. I can't find my credentials. They're like, ma'am, you got to go all the way around. I'm like, oh, gosh, I would have been here on time. I'm like, I can't find my credential. I think it's in my car somewhere. And then Bill's like, oh, you're 1025. Bill, my saving grace this morning.
See, I need to meet Bill on a personal level because they actually did make me go around. I parked in the parking structure. They let me in. And I used the whole, I work with 1025 the game. They let me in. And this time around, they made me walk around.
It's okay. You get the steps in. We both got our steps in this morning, Junie. I don't know if you saw, and I know we're talking basketball right now, but a big day for the Nashville Predators. When I was driving around, the entire plaza is set up. They have a stage. I mean, fans, Preds jerseys, people are.
Are they already out and about?
They are already out and about, getting their spots on the plaza. Not going to lie, it looks kind of cool, even though I was a little late. Got to see so many people arriving there. The ceremony will start at 10 a.m. for the Pecorine statue unveiling.
Well, good. I mean, I'm glad you actually got to go out there and at least see the crowd and engage the interest. Because, listen, I think Predators fans are one of the most underrated fan bases, like, out there. I mean, you don't hear about them a lot. They got highlighted big time when they were in the Stanley Cup in 2017. But, I mean, this is a passionate group. And the fact that you can get these guys, puck drop is until 1 p.m. against the Seattle Kraken here at Bridgestone Arena. And we already have fans lining up at 9 a.m., 4 hours before, just to get a glimpse of Pekka Rinne and this new statue that we're all so eager and excited to see. So a very special day for a very special player and a very special person. In the city.
Yeah, Max, we had Sean Henry on.
Did you call me Max?
I was texting Max.
She's at it again.
I was texting Max because he's going to be down there, and I want him to send videos so you can check out the 1025 The Game social media pages so we can put some up there. But Max is going to have the man who created this sculpture on the pregame show right after we get off the air. So Junie and I will actually be until noon today. Then we'll transition to the Preds pregame show. Max will have the man who sculpted this. He's a Clarksville native, makes statues like this all the time. I mean, this statue has parts of, you know, Pekka's stick and some of his gear. So
some of his pads as well. And he said that he's the only person that has seen the finished product.
Scott Wise will be on with Max. He is the man from Clarksville, season ticket holder for the Nashville Predators. So just all around. Here we go. There's pictures from the plaza already. People lining up just all around. You can see it's covered. So
that thing looks absolutely massive.
So about 800, 900 pounds. It's like 11 feet tall. Pretty remarkable. They closed the time capsule earlier this week where friends and Predators, workers, players, everyone was able to, you know, write some letters, put some memorabilia in there. And in 35 years, they will go back and open that time capsule. That's always something that I wanted to do in school
I was about to say. I was like, I want to be involved in the time capsule. I'm like, why did we get sent over this memo? I want to come back in 35 years. You know, my son, who was just born in 2022, I can bring him back as a 35-year-old man and be like, hey, your dad put something in a time capsule. You want to come read it? He's probably going to be like, no, I don't care at that point. But, you know, I don't know. I just thought I've always wanted to do a time capsule, too. Never gotten the opportunity to do it.
So I feel like
we missed out.
Pretty amazing, historic day here in Nashville, in Bridgestone Arena. Pekka Rinne is going to be here, but they also have a game coming up at 1 o'clock. So we're going to talk about all of it throughout the show today. As I mentioned earlier, Junie and I will be on the air until noon today. You get 3 hours of us, and then we're handing the reins over to Max Herz as he will have your pregame show, and puck drop is at 1 p.m. today. Seattle Kraken again, the doubleheader here this weekend. But I'm asking fans throughout the entire show. Junie and I are going to discuss a lot of different topics. There's so much going on in the sports world right now. But in honor of today and in honor of the Pekka-Rinne statue unveiling, we want you guys to text us, call us, and tell us your favorite Pekka-Rinne story. If you ever had the opportunity to meet him, one of your favorite things about him. Today is such a special day for him, for the Nashville sports world, for the Tennessee sports world. I mean, to get a statue of yourself in front of the arena you played in, it symbolizes the impact not only on the ice, but to the people who work in this organization, to your community. And it is one of the highest honors, Junie. You talk about having your jersey in the rafter as well. Having a statue out front is even a step further. And it just shows that he is the version of the player and the person that they want to be a part of this organization. So, Predators fans, text us, call us, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Tell us your favorite Pekka-Rinne story. Are you going to be here on the plaza today? We want to see your pictures. Tag us at 1025 The Game. And also, Junie and I are starting a hashtag. Hashtag pack the plaza for Pekka. So we are just going to discuss that all on the show today. Coming up next, though, Junie and I are going to switch gears, talk a little NCAA basketball, talk a little Tennessee Vols. Vols fans, how are you feeling this morning? And coming up at 9:30, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio is going to join us. Jack was at the Kentucky Football Pro Day yesterday. Mike Vrabel was at the Kentucky Football Pro Day yesterday. And Will Levis put on quite the performance. We got a packed show today. Coming up on Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Saturday, Nashville. Welcome into Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3 the Game. We are live from Bridgestone Arena this morning. We'll have you covered all the way until noon, then hand over the reins to Max Herz for the Predators pregame show. The plaza is starting to get packed right out front of Bridgestone Arena. You got the Pekka-Rinne statue unveiling this morning.
The hashtag is working.
Hashtag pack the plaza for Pekka. The ceremony will start at 10 a.m. David Poile will speak. Pekka-Rinne will speak. Sean Henry will speak. And there, the statue is covered out front. They've got a stage. A lot of Predators fans are out there in their gear today. So come out. Come see Pekka-Rinne's statue. Looks like it's going to be a pretty awesome ceremony. We are getting pictures from friends who are out there because we are hosting the show in here, Junie. But very exciting morning for the Nashville Predators, for the entire organization, and Pekka-Rinne. So throughout the show, text us, call us, tell us your favorite Pekka-Rinne story, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Junie, you started discussing, you know, the tournament and some of the games that we saw last night. Looks like no Big Ten or SEC teams are in the tournament anymore. And if you look at some of the teams that are still standing, It's not a sexy group as far as big bloods and Power Five schools, and I absolutely freaking love it.
Oh, I do too.
And it just shows the parity in college basketball. So this was a tweet last night, and I know Princeton since has been knocked out, but the tweet is, one of San Diego State, Creighton, Princeton, Kansas State, Florida Atlantic will play for the national championship. So, I mean, you hear those names and you have to smile because these are teams that we don't see constantly in the conversation to win a national championship. I mean, we talk about the Blue Bloods all year round. There's no Blue Bloods in it. And as much as I love my Kentucky Wildcats, I'm not shy to say that. I love that we are getting to see so many different programs being able to compete for a national championship. You mentioned Miami. They have the ACC Player of the Year, their point guard. They took down number one Houston last year. So no number one seeds, Junie, will advance to the Elite Eight.
When is the last time that that's happened?
I was trying to figure that out last night. I was trying to figure out, you know, who is the lowest seed to have ever won a national championship? When is the last time?
Was it UConn in 14 when they were a 9 seed and they beat Kentucky? Was that the lowest seed that's ever won?
That is probably up there, I would say. I know that the lowest seed to have ever made an Elite Eight is a 16 seed, which St. Peter's did last year. That was the first time.
They were 15.
Nope. St. Peter's was a 16 seed. Oh, 15. I'm sorry. They were 15 seed. The first ever 15 seed to advance to Elite Eight.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you look at the college basketball world right now and we talk about all the teams we discussed that were in contention or people had as their final four in their bracket, I think I can confidently say that UConn is probably one of the last teams standing that people had put on their bracket to make
Texas.
A deep run. And Texas.
I feel like a lot of people had Texas in the Final Four. I mean, when I was looking at people's brackets, Alabama versus Texas was a really hot national championship that people were predicting. You know, Texas had gone through a lot this year with the whole Chris Beard situation, mm-hmm. You know, losing out on your coach, interim coach coming in. You know, they were a perennial top five team throughout the season. They kind of slipped a little bit. But as of late, they won the Big 12 championship. They got hot down the stretch. They have a really good, young, talented team that seems to be really be putting it together. So as of right now, I feel like Texas has to be the betting favorite to win it all at this current moment. They're the highest seed left. They're the two seed. They're going to be facing five seed Miami. Which
that's going to be a good matchup.
That's going to be a crazy good game. I'm looking at all these matchups really, and you know what I saw from you know Creighton and San Diego State. I had San Diego State losing in the first round, which is
me too against Charleston.
Yeah, and it's just like San Diego State has just shocked everybody. You know Creighton is really no surprise as well. They have a really complete team, really good shooting, and they're big man. I mean, he was making a huge impact last night against Princeton. Obviously, a size advantage there, but, you know, Creighton looked really good as well.
Junie, I had Princeton plus 10. Creighton won by 11. I was like, duh!
Well, no.
That's the worst beat of all time.
But that's the thing, though, is I was freaking out because I had Creighton minus 10.
Okay,
And so when they were kind of going back and forth with the foul shots and Princeton kept hitting these threes, I was like, no, don't cut into it. So another good day for me, 3-1 on my picks from yesterday. So 6-2 total in the Sweet 16.
I was 4-2 last week, and I can't figure out off the top of my head. I got that one wrong. I know I picked Miami. I thought they would win outright, which was that was a big win. I picked Texas. So you know,
picked San Diego State to cover, which I mean,
they covered.
They covered
well,
all right.
That's you know kind of the game I wanted to discuss. We talk about the Big Ten and the SEC both having the most teams to make it into the tournament, right? The deepest conferences.
Yeah.
Having eight teams to make it into the tournament, and now none of them. You talk about the level of play in the SEC. None of them have advanced to the Elite Eight, Junie. And we're seeing Big 12 was another one of the conferences that was really deep. We haven't even mentioned Kansas State. They're going to be a hard out. Marquise Noel is, I think, my new favorite college basketball player. If you have not watched Kansas State and Marquise Noel, you need to watch them. And they will play FAU, the winner of the UT-FAU game. So they will match up for the Elite Eight today. And Junie and I will make all our picks at 11:45 today. So help you win a little bit of money. But I wanted to bring this story up, Junie. It's just kind of discuss, or it's just about, you know, college basketball and some of the human stories that we don't see day in and day out. And I don't know if you remember, and Nick, you too, a couple years ago, Keontae Johnson was the preseason SEC Player of the Year, played for Florida, had a really scary moment where he was on the basketball court and he collapsed. He collapsed on the court. It's a very scary video. It got caught on camera, collapsed on the court, you know, had to go see medical care. And it turned out he had some sort of condition which allowed that to happen. And, right, a guy who you don't know if you're ever going to play college basketball again when you're sitting and getting all of these tests in the hospital. And actually, because of insurance reasons, wasn't allowed to go back and play for the University of Florida. And a story came out on Boardroom the other day, and I screenshotted it because I want to bring it up on the show today, Junie. But This is what it says. Keontae Johnson suffered an on-court collapse in a 2020 game while with the Florida Gators. He was faced with a decision. The NCAA offered a $5 million incentive to call it quits in college basketball, to quit, to not play for another organization. Johnson turned down the insurance payout and chose to pursue a professional basketball career and is currently the star of the Kansas State's March Madness run. And there was a quote by him that said, you know, I wouldn't trade this opportunity for the world, making it to the Elite Eight. And I mean, $5 million is a lot of money. It's life-changing money. And Keontae Johnson is about a top 50 player, you know, as far as if you look at the NBA draft and things like that. But I mean, just a remarkable comeback story of choosing to play college basketball. I don't know if I would be able to, you know, to make that decision. I mean, $5 million, we mentioned it, is a life-changing amount of money, but he decided to bet on himself and choose to go to another program, play college basketball, have an opportunity that he's having today to compete to play in a Final Four. I mean, you talk about, when you talk to any college athlete, any professional athlete, they make a lot of money. And with NIL too, now the opportunity to make money in college. But a lot of the times it's, I want to win a championship. And that's something you can't pay for. That's not something you can just get, right? It's the highest level of achievement in your specific sport.
I was talking to somebody about this last night, and you know, I wanted to watch the tournament games, and you know, my wife Shannon and I were hanging out with another couple, and we were watching some basketball, and they were mentioning like, oh yeah, like March Madness is great. We just don't typically watch college basketball. And I was like, the unique thing about this tournament and this sport is that, number one, when you get to the tournament, anybody can win.
Yeah.
And number two, especially for those smaller schools, which we're seeing a bunch of small schools still in a position to win, like the FAUs, the Creightons, the San Diego States, not only do they have to have a really good regular season, but they have to win their conference tournament. And not every and it takes everything to align just to make it into the tournament for small schools like this. And they work all year long just for this moment. And for them to not only have a good regular season, win their conference tournament, which is hard enough to do against teams that you're so familiar with, but to get to the tournament and make some noise. And these are guys that are likely not going to go on to the NBA. These are guys that after their college career is over, they're going to move to the real world, and they're going to have to go get real jobs and not be that star basketball player anymore. So it means the most to these guys because it's such a luck of the draw. And even once you get that luck of the draw, just to be able to get to the tournament and make some noise and go on a run, you're going to be remembered forever at your school because you were a part of that. And it's something that's so special and something that's so unique because there's no other tournament or no other sport that has implications like that.
That has as much parity, too, and the ability of a 15 seed to beat a 1 seed. I mean, we wouldn't see that in college football. It's just different because of, you know, the physicality of the players. Basketball is actually a sport where you can overcome that on the court. So we got some elite games today, and we're also asking fans all show long to text us in your favorite Pekka-Rinne story. We have Janice Lane. She texted in and said, my favorite on-ice Pekka moment was when he scored a goal. As a retired Vandy Children's Hospital pediatric oncology nurse, I'm in awe of everything he has done to support our precious patients and his many other charities and works in the communities. Pekka has a heart of pure gold. So what a amazing story. You don't get a statue placed out in front of the arena you performed in for so many years if you're not just a great person. So Pekka-Rinne's statue unveiling will begin at 10 a.m. this morning in just about 30 minutes. Text us in your stories all show long. But coming up next, Junie and I will be joined by Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. He was at Kentucky's Pro Day yesterday. Mike Vrabel was in attendance. And Jack Pilgrim has been covering the SEC college basketball world. Going to touch on a bunch of different things with Jack Pilgrim. Coming up next on Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3, the Game. Happy Saturday, Nashville. Junie and I are live from Bridgestone Arena this morning. Nick Frazier is with us live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. If you want to weigh in on our text or phone line all show long, we're asking you to text in your favorite Pecorine moment, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And now we are going to go to our phone line. Nick, do we have Jack on?
Almost. We are still on the phone with them.
Oh, still efforting Jack Pilgrim. Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. He was at the University of Kentucky's Pro Day yesterday. A lot of NFL personnel, a lot of NFL GMs, head coaches in attendance yesterday, Junie, in Lexington, Kentucky, to take a look at Will Levis, a guy who earlier this year was regarded as, you know, one of the top three quarterbacks, I think, in some people's minds after Anthony Richardson's performance at the combine. He has dropped a little bit below just based off of Anthony Richardson's athletic ability. But, you know, he was a guy who turned a lot of heads at the Pro Day yesterday. And we asked the question to Tennessee Titans fans on how they would feel about the Tennessee Titans.
Those responses were glorious. Thank you to everybody who did respond, because gauging how Titans fans feel about Will Levis is really – I mean, there are some fans that were saying they would drop being a Titans fan if they drafted Will Levis. I thought that was insane, but
a little dramatic. Well, we're going to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Jack, how are we doing this morning? Thanks for coming on.
Oh, I'm doing great. I wish I were in New York City at the Elite Eight today, but unfortunately I'm not. I'm actually packing my bags and going down to the McDonald's All-American game in Houston, so kind of having to turn my attention to recruiting, unfortunately, now that Kentucky basketball is out of it. But all things considered, I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Good. Good to have you on this morning. Well, Jack, I'm sure you just heard some of our conversation, but, you know, covering the University of Kentucky, Will Levis obviously turned heads this last or 2 years ago and this year, in the 2 years that he played for UK, and has been looked at as, I would say, probably the most polarizing quarterback in this year's NFL draft. I know the Pro Day was yesterday. Mike Vrabel of the Tennessee Titans was out there watching him. The offensive coordinator was out there. They stopped at KSR Grill first, Jack. But, you know, what was the vibe yesterday just surrounding Will Levis? What are your thoughts on him as a pro prospect, and do you think that he could potentially fall out of the top 10?
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if there is a more polarizing prospect, because you can't have more of a, you know, up junior year and more of a down senior year, and based on various circumstances. And I think if you just look at the grand scheme of things, you can just throw out basically anything that you saw this past year with him, because the offensive line play was absolutely terrible. He got banged up earlier. There were injuries elsewhere that kind of took away some of his key weapons that really limited what his production, what his upside was going to show anyway. And when he did make some of those troubling decisions and threw some errant picks and some of the issues that we saw down the stretch, it was because he was so banged up and a nervous wreck in the pocket because of how terrible the offensive line play was. He just was not the same player that we saw, you know, confident, swaggy, throwing, you know, 60 yards down the field without hesitation that we saw as a junior. That is the player that we're going to see in the NFL, and I think that's what we saw at Pro Day. He was unbelievably confident. He was loose. He was making all the right throws, and I think he showed exactly what NFL scouts wanted to see, that this past year was more of an anomaly and not who he is in the grand scheme of things.
We've got Jack Pilgrim on with us from Kentucky Sports Radio. Okay, Jack, so, you know, you have watched him this year, 2 years ago, his junior year, which he was very successful, and when he was paired with Liam Cohen, his offensive coordinator, you know, really put him on the map as far as a pro prospect, and this year took definitely a downstep, and you mentioned offensive line play, having young receivers out there. But what do you say to people who say, well, you know, he threw this many interceptions, and, you know, at the end of the Ole Miss game, right, he basically lost them the game, in him in situations like that, just not being able to take care of the football?
Well, he is a guy that is known for his confidence and his swagger. And you know, he turned heads at the combine by saying, I have a rocket of an arm and I can't wait to show it. Like, that's what he's known for. And that player was not who he was down the stretch throughout the regular season this past year because, again, he was a nervous wreck. He did not trust his offensive line. He did not trust his offensive coordinator. And he felt that he was going to have to force the issue more often than not. He didn't have that safety valve with Wandale Robinson that he had as a junior. He didn't have Liam Cohen, who he trusted with everything that he had to put him in position to succeed. He felt like he was on an island by himself, having to make plays alone, essentially. And still, he had a solid year in terms of numbers. And if you take away batted balls and, you know, some of the kind of fluky interceptions that he had, the numbers really aren't as bad as they look on paper. So I think for, you know, Titans fans, whoever they're concerned about, big picture, worst case scenario with Will, I just do not look at – if you're going to look at him big picture-wise and what you're hoping for out of him, just watch his junior year film, play, you know, hit play, hit repeat, rewind play, like just ignore everything that you saw this past year. He tried to make something out of nothing more often than not, and look at how he performed it at the combine. Look at how he performed at Pro Day, because that is the quarterback that you're going to get. And if you still don't like it, if you still don't like some of the errant passes and the decision-making, I totally get it. But just don't use him being a nervous wreck in the pocket because his offensive line play was terrible and the offensive coordinator was just not good enough as a senior to justify some of that rationale.
We're talking to Jack Pilgrim from Kentucky Sports Radio. Jack, the top quarterbacks, I'd say three out of the top four going into this draft are out of the SEC. We've been talking a lot about Will Levis, but how do you see Anthony Richardson and Bryce Young kind of matching up with the traits that Will Levis has? And out of those three SEC quarterbacks, which one do you feel is the best pro prospect?
Yeah, I guess it just depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for more of a finesse guy, you know, the high IQ guy, you know, I think Bryce Young is an excellent quarterback. I obviously have my concerns about size. He's probably 5'9 and 165 pounds soaking wet. I think that's something to be concerned about if you're going into the most physical sport in league and in all of sports. So, like, I totally understand that if you have your concerns there. Anthony Richardson, I got to see a lot of him physically. He has all the, you know, Cam Newton, Vince Young, all of the physical traits that you love, but I really was not impressed with a lot of the on-field stuff. But, you know, it's the same thing that you could say about Kentucky and Will Levis, and, you know, the physical traits looked incredible, but, you know, some of the on-field production wasn't, you know, kind of underwhelmed a little bit. So you can nitpick however you want, and just because I know the sample size and I've seen Will obviously more than the other guys, I have complete confidence that Will is going to be a really good quarterback. And I was listening to some of the scouting breakdowns and what they were talking about on SEC Network and NFL Network and everything yesterday. And one of the analysts said that the ceiling for Will is Josh Allen and the floor is Carson Wentz. And it kind of hit me then where it's like, okay, if we're talking about a floor being Carson Wentz for Will Levis, which, you know, Carson is not a great quarterback, and there's a reason why he's bouncing around from team to team right now and struggling to maintain a starting job. But at one point, he was the number two draft pick and did have a wildly successful years with the Philadelphia Eagles. And if that's the floor for Will Levis, I mean, you could – for my money, I would take that bet, knowing what could happen in between those two, the floor and the ceiling there. So,
absolutely,
maybe so, I'm back.
I want to transition to a little bit of SEC basketball here with you, Jack. You know, the ACC formerly was the big time basketball conference, but now that we've seen Coach K and Roy Williams, Jim Boeheim retire, Rick Pitino obviously moving on, we've seen the SEC kind of elevate as one of the premier basketball conferences, something that we haven't seen in a long time. Chris Beard just got hired at Ole Miss. Calipari, we know what he's done at UK. Nate Oates, Musselman, Rick Barnes, Buzz Williams, all these big names. Do you see the SEC as being like the big college basketball conference for years to come with all these big-time coaches and big-time recruits starting to commit to SEC schools?
I do. I love the product. It's kind of a dog-eat-dog conference, unfortunately, and I think that's why the losses pile up. And I just never understood. It was kind of a similar situation with the Big Ten this year. They continue to get top 25 love, and they got the benefit of the doubt for kind of beating each other up, but the SEC really didn't get that same credit. But you look at the NCAA tournament, and obviously – it hasn't been the this past weekend in particular.
Yeah.
Wasn't very favorable to the SEC, but in the grand scheme of things, they outperformed their expectations given what the seeds have been to at least start things out and getting to the Sweet 16. So I think that it's an attractive destination just from a conference perspective. There's a lot of high end coaches and Hall of Fame level coaches and talent and pro prospects, and I think the modern style of basketball everybody's fallen in love with Nate Oates, that obviously got him burned last night, but it's still attracting pro-level talent because that's the type of style of play that they're going to be seeing in the pros. You get guys like Brandon Miller, and you get NBA-level guys because that's what they're going to be playing at the next level, and that's their ultimate dream and ultimate destination. So I think when push comes to shove, it is really, really attractive because they are transitioning to that modern style of basketball, and it's a dog-eat-dog conference, and I think it prepares them best for postseason play.
We've got Jack Pilgrim on with us from Kentucky Sports Radio. Jack, just taking a look at the tournament as a whole right now, we're seeing teams and programs making such a run that we haven't seen before. I mean, San Diego State, FAU, Miami, even Miami, I mean, they were, they're a five seed. You got Creighton in the mix. How refreshing, and I know we might be a little biased because we love our Kentucky Wildcats, but how refreshing is it just not to see some blue bloods in the Elite Eight?
Me selfishly speaking, I'm glad that none of Kentucky's biggest rivals are making the run, so I can not get whiplash trying to do spin zones of why it's not that big of a deal that Kentucky continues to not make runs and other blue bloods are. So yeah, it is fantastic that we're all sitting at home on our couches watching FAU win and San Diego State win and all that. So yeah, it is really cool, and it just shows that how much parity there is in basketball and why there are no great teams this season, and how you can get guys like FAU who dominated in the regular season and didn't get the benefit of the doubt in terms of seeding just because of the conference that they're coming from, and when push came to shove, that they are truly one of the best in college basketball and are deserving of an Elite Eight spot. So, it's been super refreshing to kind of just take a step back and let the madness and the chaos just kind of play out the way it needs to. And, unfortunately, Kansas State is looking for my money like the team to beat as of right now.
Yes.
I know tonight's game, Gonzaga, UConn, that'll probably be the other side of the bracket. Whoever comes out of that game, I think, is going to play Kansas State in the title game. But it's awesome and super refreshing to kind of take a step back and not have to worry about narratives and spin zones and all that stuff, and just enjoy the chaos for what it is.
And definitely a lot of chaos this year. Going to be excited to see which teams will advance to the Final Four. Got some more matchups coming up later today. Jack Pilgrim of KSR, Kentucky Sports Radio. You want to follow him on Twitter. It's Jack Pilgrim KSR. And you also host a weekly podcast that you can follow as well. Jack, plug your podcast quick.
Yeah, Sources A Podcast. We're on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, all that good stuff.
Well, Jack, we appreciate you coming on with us today, talking a little football, a little SEC basketball, a little tournament action. Thanks for coming on, and enjoy your Saturday.
Appreciate it, Jack.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Yep, no problem. That was Jack Pilgrim of KSR Radio. He covers specifically Kentucky basketball, Kentucky football, and also the SEC as well. About to head down to the McDonald's All-American game. A lot of those guys are going to be probably heading to SEC schools next year. Going to be
an exciting time.
But coming up next, we are going to switch gears a little bit and talk specifically about the Tennessee Volunteers. After, more than 24 hours after the loss, how are Tennessee Volunteer fans feeling this morning? Because I think that this season should be viewed as a success. And also, all show long, we're taking your best Pecorine stories. Text us, call us, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. In just about 15 minutes, they are going to unveil the Pecorine statue. You're listening to Michelle and Juni on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Happy Saturday, Nashville. Welcome in, Michelle and Junie. We are live from Bridgestone Arena today. Just about 15 minutes, they're going to unveil the Pecorine statue in front of Bridgestone Arena. The plaza is already starting to get packed. They've got a stage out there.
There's like hundreds of people out there already.
Hundreds of people. I know Fifth Ave is closed, so if you have a chance, get down there. Pecorine will speak, Sean Henry will speak, and David Poyle will speak in the statue unveiling. Going to be a pretty exciting scene in just about 15 minutes. But sticking now with the Tennessee Volunteers, we're going to discuss a little college basketball. What is the temperature of this fan base right now? How are you feeling? Because I believe you should view this season as a success. We've got a caller on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Let's welcome Jeff in. Hey, Jeff, how are we doing this morning?
Good morning, guys. How are you all doing?
We're doing well. Thanks, you.
Good. Hey, my question is, it's going back to the tournament and the seeding of these lower seed teams progressing throughout the tournament the way they are. What do you all think about, is this like a turn of the tables where the smaller schools that don't necessarily get the high, you know, ranking high school players in that are staying 4 and 5 years mm-hmm. through the program, and these team concepts of playing basketball as a team and not just having one or two great players is why we're seeing these younger or the smaller schools progress?
Yeah, Jeff, thanks for your call. Great question. I completely agree with that mantra. I mean, Junie, you laid it out earlier that a lot of these, you know, higher seated and smaller basketball programs, they have to start winning as soon as the conference tournament rolls around because they need to win all of those games. And then if they want to win in the tournament, you just need to just keep going. Whereas, you know, you have the luxury if you're in a Big Ten or an SEC that your conference play or the Big 12, you can lose your second game in your conference tournament and you still know that you've secured a spot. As far as the one and done mantra and just getting, you know, the shiniest toy, you know, the most athletic player, the McDonald's All-American, I completely agree that we are seeing some of these programs advance further because they have guys that stay there 4 years. And that's even been kind of the, I guess you could say, storyline or what we've seen traditionally in March. A lot of times it is these veteran teams that have played together for two, three, four years, and they have older teams. I think about a couple of Jay Wright's Villanova teams. It was a core that was together, and they had played together for so long. And, you know, I'll add something else to that. It's the transfer portal. It is the when college basketball season ends, you have to make sure you know who you're recruiting, who's coming in, who are going to be the freshmen coming in. You have to take a look at the portal. Is there anybody you want to try to go out and get? And you also, all year long, need to be making sure that you're recruiting your own players, Junie, because the ability to just hop in the transfer portal and play right away for another school has made jumping around in college athletics so frequent. And I think that definitely plays a role. I mean, you look at FAU, this team, this core, they played together for a while, and that just builds the chemistry. It builds the trust when you're on the court. Who are you going to trust to take that last second shot? And I think that was, you know, one of the inconsistencies of Tennessee here this year. It's like nobody felt confident in anybody to take that last shot that they felt they could make. And some of these teams that we're seeing year in and year out, smaller programs, but I mean, basketball is basketball.
Yeah. I definitely think Jeff was right on the money with that one. You know, when you have a veteran team and you have all those reps under you, I mean, we've just seen, you know, these teams. I hate to bring it up, but, you know, Kentucky being primarily one of them, yep, that has gotten a lot of good number one recruiting classes. What has Calipari had, like 5, 6 number one overall recruiting classes with a starting lineup of McDonald's All-Americans? And sometimes those teams falter early just because of the lack of chemistry, you know, the lack of seasons under their belt. You know, every single year that you're with your teammates and playing together and going to camps together and traveling together and all that time spent adds up to, you know, your chemistry, knowing what the guy next to you is going to do without even thinking about it. So especially when some of these teams and they're really good at shooting the ball from the perimeter, and getting a little bit of luck with who you're matched up with and which teams are susceptible for upset, having a veteran team, having guys with seniors, and I think also, you know, NIL money and encouraging some of these players to stay rather than going straight into the NBA allows teams to kind of build up their roster and not have so much turnover from year to year. And it balances out a little bit with the transfer portal, but you got to think with some of these guys getting NIL monies, guys that know that they're likely not going to make it into the NBA as a big-time player, they're going to really take advantage of this NIL money and stick with the college that they're at, make the money that they have, and meanwhile building up a bunch of chemistry with the roster and the recruits that particular team or school is going to get.
Well, and kind of transitioning, you know, from that to Tennessee and then falling to FAU earlier this week in the Sweet 16, Junie, I think there was a lot of negative energy after that loss. And believe me, I get it. It takes time to mourn a loss. And because, you know, you have such expectations for a team like that. But, you know, when you take a step back and look at what this Tennessee Volunteers basketball team did this year, that is pretty darn successful. I mean, that is a very successful season. I talk about this all the time. Making it to this second weekend of the tournament is so incredibly hard. And Rick Barnes in his post-game press conference made a comment that he felt like the moment was a little bit too big for his team. The lights were a little bit too bright. And the ability to rise to the occasion and have confidence in yourself, have confidence in your teammates to make a shot at the end of the game or, you know, make important three-pointers as the clock is winding down. That is so important, and that plays a role into, you know, how long have you guys been playing together? What is your trust level with your shooters on your team? You know, how consistent have you been all year in practice? And all of these things, you know, start to build up. But I thought that was a really interesting comment by Rick Barnes on, you know, they know these players, and he felt like some of them, their body language out there was that they were uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that we see in championship teams is you need to be able to rise to the occasion when you feel uncomfortable in those moments. And, you know, sometimes that's something that you just can't teach a team.
Well, and for the FAU UT matchup, I mean, let's look at some of FAU's best player, John L. Davis. He's a sophomore. Elijah Martin, a sophomore. And then we also look at the big man, Golden, in the middle. He is also a sophomore as well. So you're talking about guys that have been in this FAU system for a year. They're a competitive team in Conference USA. They keep that core of those big three players intact. They take that next step because I personally saw it firsthand. When I first went into college, I started doing like a dual enrollment at the University of Louisville for my first semester and then went on to transfer at Western. But you know, it's a big jump for some of these big-time recruits going from their freshman to sophomore year, and I saw that with a particular player in Donovan Mitchell. You know, Donovan Mitchell was coming off the bench his freshman year for Louisville. He was only averaging like 4.5 points a game, and then that sophomore season, that next year, he went to be on a 15-point per game player, became the star of Louisville's basketball team after coming off the bench, and then ends up getting drafted in the first round of the NBA. So you're talking about, like, some of these teams that bring back these players, they have chemistry with the guys that are returning. It does bring a huge factor into this. And when you're seeing some of these major teams, like a Houston, like an Alabama, like Kansas, Kentucky, all these teams that have brought in big-time freshman recruits, they're getting eliminated early with some of these more veteran teams that have had a bunch of years under their belt chemistry-wise.
Well, the interesting thing, too, specifically talking about Tennessee, is they had a veteran team. they had a core group of guys who've played together. Zakai Ziegler, second year in the system. Santiago Vescovi, Josiah Jordan James, Jusos Plavsic. They had a core that was older. You know, Key coming in, he's a grad student, right? So they had a team that this core has been together for a bit, and older guys. It just, Rick Barnes said it himself at the end of the press conference. You know, the moment got too big for this team. The lights got too bright. And that is such a narrative that happens with college basketball teams, especially the way this tournament is set up. It is designed that way. That is why this tournament is so hard. And I look at this Tennessee basketball season and I view it as a success. You made it to the Sweet 16. That is an accomplishment in your program. You've only made it to the Elite Eight once in Tennessee basketball history. To make it to the Sweet 16,
that is a successful
season.
You
lost to FRU.
I just think if you don't look at who they lost to,
yeah.
Number one, and we've already talked about this. FAU's a really good team. You know, Jack Pilgrim from KSR came on. They are a really good team. He said that as well, that they're deserving to be in the Elite Eight. Get over the fact that they lost to FAU. If you were told before the tournament, with the way this Tennessee team was playing, that they would beat Duke and make it into the Sweet 16, every single Vols fan would have taken that any day. So don't let the narrative drive it. They lost to a good team. They had a good season. Some injuries kind of took them back. But overall, this Tennessee team had a good year.
Switching to the NFL, specifically the Tennessee Titans, why do fans feel so passionately about one specific player? Very, very polarizing. Junie and I will discuss that player. Coming up on the other side, you're listening to Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app.